KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Radio fills our mind, and we have a premium, a thank you gift that, in a sense, appeals to both.
I like to think of it as a prize.
It is a prize. It's a gold
prize
star.
For realizing that you should be a member of this station and for actually taking the plunge.
Yeah. Yeah, and for taking the plunge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gold stars. You were saying that yesterday. Yeah. Gold stars.
So what prize do you have for me right now?
So do you like the Selected Shorts? Do you listen to Selected Shorts? It's on Tuesdays, 10 p.m. on KUOW.
Yeah. Short stories. Some of them are funny. Some of them are very serious.
They run the gamut. Read by wonderful performers and actors. You know, Selected Shorts is a great show. The guy who started it just passed away recently, Isaiah Sheffer. But he remains sort of the guiding force, and the people carry it on. The institution keeps going on. Well, they're going to be at the Moore Theater, mm-hmm. April 13th. And we have 10 pairs of tickets as our prize, as your prize to supporting public radio at 206-543-9595. And saying $150 is what I think this public radio service is worth for a whole year's worth of entertainment and information, you can get a pair of tickets to see Selected Shorts live. See it performed live. Enjoy the stories. We're all about the stories at the public radio, and we're all about the stories in Seattle. Here's a chance to Selected Shorts live at the Moore, April 13th.
Yeah, 10 pairs at the $150 level by calling 206-543-9595, 206-543-9595, or toll-free 1-866-NPR-KUOW, 1-866-677-5869. And I might point out to you parents that one of the people reading in this show is Maria from Sesame Street.
Oh, really?
So, I'm just saying, if you want to be in the same room as Maria and actually see her maybe in a different role as a different kind of artist.
Well, who are these other actors? Dennis O'Hare, American Horror Story, and True Blood? I've never seen that.
Well, I watched True Blood, but I don't know all the actors.
Kirsten Vagsness. I don't even know I'm saying her name.
Criminal Minds.
I do see the Criminal Minds sometimes.
They're going to be performing, as they put it on our little sheet about it, Wild and Wacky Tales by the master of dark humor, Roald Dahl.
Oh, great. They're going to do Roald Dahl stories. Many of these short stories set in the kitchen.
Love it.
$150. You can get a pair of tickets. Selected Shorts live at the Moore Theater. It's our thank you. It's the prize you get for showing your support to this service. It's the prize you get for knowing about Selected Shorts and knowing you enjoy hearing stories read on the radio, laying back at 10 p.m. in the evening and closing your eyes and having someone transport you with great literature and great performance.
And we would like you to be rewarded by giving money to this radio station just because you love it and you're glad it's there and you're glad it's not full of advertising dollars guiding the content. But if you're a person who also likes a nice prize, now's your chance.
I like a nice prize.
Well, who doesn't really like a nice prize, you know? We can't all be selfless all the time, right?
Right.
206-543-9595. Only 7 pairs left to go.
It's fun to wear those T-shirts. Or it's fun to have the earbuds because those are nice prizes, and you can sort of remind yourself that this is a gold star when you have an earbud that says KUOW 94.9. Or when you're sitting in the audience at the Moore, $150 pledge at 1-866-677-5869, and you're listening to these actors reading these fun stories from Roald Dahl, fun and chilling, and they're going to be a little off because Roald Dahl was a little off. If you've seen or read Willy Wonka, you know that.
That's your adult stories, then you really know.
He is the person, he can do that. And that'll be the thank you. That'll be the prize you're getting for supporting this service that you enjoy.
Two pairs left. Bashy in Seattle called to say that the cabin limo drivers are all obsessed with listening to KUOW. And he's now rewritten KUOW to be an acronym that means King Under Our Wings.
King Under Our Wings.
I like that. And Matt writes, all right, I'm finally pledging. I love your station and I would pledge more, but I'm unemployed and I have no income. Wow, Matt.
Jeez. Yeah. And yet, who knows what he's pledging, what he can afford. It's to join. It's from your sacrifice. We equally sacrifice. The money is important, but it's that you join and you're part of this community that you are listening to. And We thank you.
And he also has a little job application on here where it says, I've been told I have a great radio voice and face.
Yes.
Thanks, Matt. We want to hear from you. 206-543-9595. One pair of tickets left. One final chance to go see Maria from Sesame Street in person doing something totally different. 206-543-9595. If you
don't... Somebody should donate for Matt so he can go hear how the actors are, and then he can, you know, maybe work his way into some work doing the selected shorts.
I like that.
Or, you know, he could send us a reading of his favorite short story.
Or pledge on behalf of the people. Maybe add a little more to the pot for all the people who are out
Good
of work
idea.
And can't yet afford to join for KOW. You can amp up your pledge in honor of somebody you know who has been struggling and out of work. Give us a call, 206-543-9595, or go online, kow.org.
Thanks.
Support for KUOW comes from the Everett Clinic, offering a wide range of minimally invasive, high-tech surgical techniques, including laparoscopy, surgical robotics, and image-guided surgery. More at everettclinic.com/tech.
48 degrees and cloudy in Seattle. It's going to be cloudy all day with a continuing chance of showers and a high of 54.
Support for KUOW comes from STG, presenting guitarist Jesse Cook, exploring the roots of Latin music, Friday, April 12th at the Moore Theater. More information at stgpresents.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory...
The noise that you hear at the moment is the sound of the air raid siren. I'm standing here just on the steps of St. Martin's in the Fields.
I always encourage people to experiment. If they can't find it in the restaurants here in Seattle or it's far away, you know, get a great cookbook and try making it at home.
There's Sarah Dickerman talking about cooking and restaurants. She's joins us at the end of the hour to talk about some of her favorite restaurant recommendations and cookbook recommendations. She's been doing that for a long time, one of the services that come to you on public radio. You also heard some of the early reporting that took place on radio. We're going to talk about how journalism, broadcast journalism, came into being and how it evolved over the years as part of our radio retrospective series. That's one of the things we'll be talking about today on this radio program on weekday on KUOW. I'm Steve Scher. We are also going to talk about death with dignity and how that has worked in this state. Washington voters back in 2008 put in place the Death with Dignity Act, giving people choices in end-of-life decisions. One of the questions, how would the law be implemented? How would people come to understand the law? And maybe most importantly, how would doctors and patients together talk about the law appropriately, safely, fairly? A new study that's out today is taking a look at the state's 2009 Death with Dignity Law and how it's being implemented. Dr. Elizabeth Loggers is an oncologist, medical director at Seattle Cancer Care Alliance's Supportive and Palliative Care Service. She wrote the report being published today in the New England Journal of Medicine. Full disclosure, Seattle Cancer Care Alliance is an underwriter for KUOW. Dr. Loggers, thanks for talking to us.
Well, thank you.
Interesting topic. What prompted you to want to undertake this study?
Well, at the time that we first began writing this paper, there were many states who were considering death with dignity legislation, and we wanted to be able to provide information about how we made the decision to participate, how we implemented our policy, and then compare our results to Washington and Oregon state-level data.
So when you started looking back at it, how big a sampling group could you take in to figure out how the law was being implemented?
Well, we followed the patients who inquired into our program between March 5th, 2009 and December 31st, 2011. And in that time period, we had 114 inquiries. And of those inquiries, 39% elected not to pursue death with dignity. 26% did not continue with the process or died before they could complete it, and 35% went on to receive the prescription, of which only 24 actually took the medication, which is about 60% actually used the medication that they received.
What did the other 40% do once they got the medication?
They did not take the medication, and they eventually died of their disease.
Did you ask them why they acquired in the first place and acquired the medication? Before, I mean, obviously before they passed away.
Right. We didn't, but we know anecdotally from working with our advocates that many of the patients were just grateful to have the medication in hand, and that they didn't necessarily need to use it, but it was that control, you know, that opportunity to have the medication that was actually something that they were quite grateful for.
So a person to meet the requirements to qualify for a lethal prescription under Washington State's Death with Dignity Law, they have to be 18, they have to be competent, a resident of Washington. They make an oral and written request signed and dated by the patient, witnessed by two other people. They repeat the oral request to the physician at least 15 days after making the initial oral request, and then they wait 2 days after signing the written request before the prescription is written, and have been determined by the attending physician and another consulting physician to have a terminal disease from which they will die within 6 months. Many safeguards in place in this law. When Seattle Cancer Care Alliance and started looking into this law and how to talk about it, how did you feel about how did doctors tell you they felt about the safeguards in place?
Well, I'd also like to mention that, just to be really clear, that the patient also has to be able to self-administer this medication. So if at the time that they're requesting it's clear that they can't self-administer the medication, they're also not eligible for that reason. They're not eligible if they are depressed or are not able to make that, are not competent to make that decision. So you're absolutely right. There are a number of safeguards, and I think that that's one of the reasons why we felt that with a structured program, we could provide this as one option in the broad range of options that there are for high-quality end-of-life care, including palliative and hospice care and specialty-level pain control.
So what are you learning from this in terms of how you're an oncologist, you deal with palliative care? What do you learn from this and how you can make people feel comfortable discussing death with dignity issues?
Well, I think what it's teaching us is that this is an opportunity, again, to provide really exceptional care for patients. You know, our goal, our primary mission is always to cure cancer, and we take that very seriously. But when that's not possible, we also have to stay with those families. We can't abandon them. And if they're actually thinking about this, we need to be there to participate in that conversation and to help keep them in that long-term relationship. You know, these patients had, on average, known their medical oncologist for 8 months, many for longer. And so we want to maintain that relationship. We want to meet them where they are. And we want to talk with them about their fears, their hopes, their likely trajectory, and what can really be done in those situations. And so what we're reassured by is the fact that the majority of these people, the vast majority, have talked with their families about this choice. They go on to die at home, and they die with hospice. And those are all, at least in my mind, indicators that the quality of the death that they're having is being maintained.
Dr. Loggers, was the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance originally either reluctant to or opposed to participating in Death with Dignity? The Death with Dignity Law?
Well, we want to be really clear that that we acknowledge that this is controversial. We know that while 85% of voters who turned out, that 85% of the voting population turned out for the referendum, that 60% of them voted in favor of this as an option. But that means that there are still 40% of people out there that were concerned. And we also, in the article, report that 38% of our physicians were either unwilling or undecided. So we acknowledge that that exists, but there was consensus about moving forward. That consensus was reached by participating in a lot of town hall meetings, by having conversations with our doctors, and by figuring out how we could do this in a way that was safe, that comported with the law, and that really provided patients and caregivers with a sense of what all their end-of-life options are.
How did the policy affect those physicians who did not support it? even after all these town hall meetings?
Well, those physicians are not compelled to participate. So it's very clear in the process that when patients and families inquire, that that inquiry goes to our Department of Patient and Family Services. Those patients are matched with an advocate, and that advocate then begins that process of figuring out if the patient finally does elect to move forward, how would we move forward, and what physicians might participate to help them in that process.
You're quoted in the Seattle Times, there's a quote of you in the Seattle Times, you can't be an oncologist for very long without honestly facing the fact that not everyone can be cured of cancer. Do you find yourself bringing up death with dignity options with terminal patients?
Well, my conversations with patients really begin with questions about what their goals are, what their hopes are, what their fears are, and I try to talk with them about what they think the end of life might look like. You know, the reality is most people have never faced this. They don't have a close family member who's passed. And what they're fearing may actually be very different and potentially much worse than the reality. And they're also often unaware of a hospice, of palliative care, and of specialized pain control. So I try to start there. I think that those are the really important components of this conversation. And if you can elicit that from patients and families, then you're having a really meaningful conversation where you can figure out what that patient and family needs.
Dr. Loggers, you report that 24 of the patients at the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance did ingest the medicine. 15% of the state's total death with dignity deaths, 255 in that same time frame. So 2009 till 2012 or 2013 that you did the study?
No, this really only goes through the end of 2011.
How do those numbers compare with, have you looked at what the assumptions were when the advocates for this law or the opponents for this law said it would be put into place? Do you have a sense of how this law is being used by the majority of the population, on average, higher, lower?
That's a great question. I don't know what the advocates and the people who were concerned about this law, what they were expecting for use, but it is very rare.
What do you take away from the study that you did with the Cancer Care Alliance in terms of, you know, moving forward and clarifying information and talking to other doctors?
Well, what I take away from this is that I think that we are succeeding at making sure that we're complying with the law, that we are actively helping patients to have high-quality conversations, and that we're helping them to die in a way that is consistent with their values and that is in line with what our professional perceptions are of what is a high-quality death, meaning at home, with their families around them, and with hospice present. So I think we take away from this that the process is going well and that we're going to continue to try to improve upon it.
And do you see it as that doctors are more comfortable with this law in part because few patients choose to use the law?
Yes. I think that with experience and with the knowledge of this information, we are getting more comfortable with the process.
And also that the part of that comfort, though, I mean, that was the Seattle Times sort of sub-headline. I was curious about it. A new study by Seattle Cancer Care Alliance oncologist says doctors are becoming more comfortable with the state's four-year-old death with dignity law, in part because so few patients are choosing to use the law to end their lives. There is a bit of a safety net in the study, in a sense, yes?
Well, I think some of the concerns against death with dignity was that it might be a slippery slope. You know, that there might be many more people using it, that there might be abuses of it, and I think that we're not finding that, and that can be reassuring.
Dr. Loggers, I appreciate you talking to us.
Thank you.
Dr. Elizabeth Loggers is an oncologist. She is the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance Center's Medical Director for Palliative Care, taking a look at how the Death with Dignity Law has been implemented in their institution, which is also, full disclosure, an underwriter of KUOW. I'm Steve Scherr. We are asking at this point in our day for you to support public radio, talk about some serious topics on KUOW, but we still remind you that these are serious topics that you're supporting with your dollars at 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. And people say, well, why do you use the pledge drive? I'm reminded of an email we got earlier when a husband and wife were discussing it, and the wife said, well, you know, I don't know why I have to call right now and pledge my support. And then the husband said, who was also a volunteer here, he said, well, how often do you call and pledge your support when they're not asking you to do it? And she said, yeah, good point.
Yeah, if we don't ask, generally speaking, people don't just call up and say, hey, can I give you some money? We have to reach out the hat and say, twice a year, we need you to support this radio station to keep it strong and to keep it going at 206-543-9595. And I would just like to highlight a contrast, Steve. I was standing in the other room with Bernard, the engineer, and of course, he keeps a TV on just to, you know, be alerted of any breaking news stuff that happens in the world. And on right now, opposite your interview about death with dignity, was the Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer. And you know what the situation is today? Beyonce and Jay-Z are going to Cuba. That's what they were talking about.
Was it legal? Was it a legal trip? Yeah.
Or just the celebrity of it.
Yeah.
All the people that want to see Beyonce and Jay-Z in Cuba. It's just a contrast. What you hear on public radio and what you hear in other media outlets. And that's all I'm going to say about it. Now, if I was another media outlet, I'd be
judgment.
Like, let me talk about this for the next 25 minutes, okay? This is very important. Show you the same clips over and over again of the back of their heads walking into a building. That's not what we do on KUOW. We try to look at the issues in a bigger, more complex way, or even look at the issues that aren't getting covered at all, and take a step back, too, and say, hey, let's talk about poetry. Let's talk about the environment. Let's talk about, you know, the different artists. Let's invite the artists of our community into the studio and get to know them better. People like Sir Mix-a-Lot, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the way we approach celebrity.
To understand the celebrity. Yeah, we talked to Mark Arm from Mudhoney.
Yeah, we're going
to. Chance we got to talk to him. He'll be, we'll have that interview tomorrow for you. We had, by way of celebrity, you know, we were talking about selected shorts at the Moore Theater, and some celebrities will be reading. Actors who know how to put on a good show are going to be reading at the Moore Theater when Selective Shorts Live will be in Seattle, a show that you enjoy, Tuesdays at 10 p.m. We had 10 pairs of tickets to give away as a prize to somebody who wanted to contribute $150 to public radio, and they get a little gold star, and they get to go to the Moore Theater. There's still one left.
One pair left at 206-543-9595. The other nine went really fast.
Stories of Roald Dahl.
People must have gotten freaked out because they could hear all the phones ringing, and they were like, well, they're all gone.
This is how it's described to us. The popular public radio series tours to Seattle for a live performance of great classic and new and super funny short stories set in the kitchen.
If you're interested in attending that show at the Moore Theater, we have one pair of tickets left at 206-543-9595. And I also encourage you, if that's something you don't want to do, I encourage you to pledge, say, at the $500 level for a lot of great entertainment. If you can afford that level, we want to hear from you at 206-543-9595. Now, you just told that nice story about the husband and wife. Couple debating this. I've just gotten a notification from them, the pledge director, that they were divorced. That was a conversation.
Oh, that's right. That was an ex-wife. That's right. Ex-wife.
Maybe
and
we know why.
That's right. I forgot that. I forgot that little salient detail. And the fact that somebody knew means that you're tracking. You're tracking and making sure we're staying as honest as we can with our facts. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is Jack Benny talking.
Jordan, Rocky Jordan.
Have you ever danced with a murderer?
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
King County.
Every week for a while, we've been bringing you a radio retrospective, taking a look back at how radio came to be. How it is that we came to be sitting in front of these microphones asking you to show your support to public radio. How it is that great journalism occurs on this broadcast medium. So today, Katie Sewell is going to remind us again about, how we evolved the tracks to where we get to Wolf Blitzer talking about Beyonce going to Cuba, and we're talking about palliative care at 10:20 in the morning.
Well, radio really changed the way that news was presented and delivered, because up until radio was a widespread thing, all news was announced in late editions of the paper. If it was breaking news, you know, you have the newsboys on the at the corner extra, yelling, extra, extra, this is the breaking news. And radio all of a sudden made it possible for breaking news to come to people immediately. And if not that, to even unfold live while they're listening to it, which was a huge revolution and something, of course, the paper found terrifying. The immediacy of the radio made the late edition of the paper seem dated by the time it was even at the street corner. And by the late 1930s, people have started to trust that radio is a reliable news source, and that it also can paint a picture of world events that the newspaper just couldn't do.
Yeah.
It was with sound.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
We're seeing the evolution again, right? We will watch Twitter feeds with appropriate hashtags as news is breaking, like when the Pope was being chosen. There were hashtags, and Twitter was the latest, and radio couldn't even bring that immediacy to it because so many thousands of people were sort of crowdsourcing the events.
Yeah, or the death of Osama bin Laden was Twittered first. That was the way it came out. During the pledge drive, we like to talk a lot about the merits and importance of broadcast journalism, so I thought, why not listen back to some of the magical moments of broadcast journalism from the past? And we start with one of the most memorable moments of early radio journalism. And we listened to 31-year-old Chicago reporter Herb Morrison.
The ship is riding majestically toward us like some great feather, riding as though it was mighty proud of a place it's playing in the world's aviation. It's practically standing still now. They've dropped ropes out of the nose of the ship, and it's been taken a hold of down on the field by a number of men.
So that's 1937, and Herb was supposed to be just doing a routine report of the Hindenburg landing in Lakehurst, New Jersey. At the time, it was the largest air vehicle of its kind. It was 804 feet in length, and it was considered a luxurious transportation travel option across the Atlantic from the United States to Germany, and for $400. And one thing people don't really know or remember is that at the time of this report, the Hindenburg had already made 10 trips, successful trips. So this was supposed to be just a routine report that he was making. He wasn't expecting anything remarkable. Now, we all know that something remarkable did happen and entered history, but I want to listen to it a little more and just think about the emotional immediacy that's in this report that you wouldn't be able to find in a paper reporting on the incident. And I also want you to pay attention not only to what the reporter is saying, but listen to what's going on in the background.
It's starting to rain again, and the back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It bursts into flames. Get it started. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my, get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks agree that this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's slashing 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the passengers screaming around here. I can't even talk to people. And friends are out there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen. Honest, it's just laying there, a massive smoking wreckage. And everybody can hardly breathe and talk and screaming. Lady, I'm sorry. Honestly, I can hardly breathe. I'm going to step inside where I cannot see it. Charlie, that's terrible. Listen, folks, I'm going to have to stop for a minute because I've lost my voice. This is the worst thing I've ever witnessed.
Wow, right?
Yeah.
Can you get through that without tears coming to your eyes? And that happened in 1937. It's just so raw and so real. It's just actually have tear in my eyes.
We hear this at different instances with radio right up to the present. We've heard this. People talk about driveway moments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what's happening, and that's just the power of the voice telling the story.
Yeah, and
in real time.
And usually they kind of, when you hear that recording, they cut it off at "Oh, the Humanity." And I think that the stuff afterwards, when he's just coughing and he's so, you know, upset, and he turns to the guy that's working with him and he just says, "Oh my, this is the worst thing I've ever witnessed." It's just, it's something that the newspaper couldn't do. You know, that's something that you find on radio, and it's almost more powerful because it's happening in your head. You know, because you're hearing it. There's something about the coupling of the images that make it dramatic, but maybe not quite as hardcore as it is when it's happening in your head. 36 people died in that incident. During radio's golden age, the war in Europe, World War II, really did a lot, actually, to secure radio's place as a trusted news source, probably more than almost anything, because that was a big incident. People wanted up to the moment reports, and it was especially the work of this man that did it.
This is Trafalgar Square. The noise that you hear at the moment is the sound of the air raid siren. I'm standing here just on the steps of St. Martin's in the Fields.
Who is that?
That's Murrow.
Murrow, of course, reporting from London, 1940, during the Blitz. That's when the Germans were trying to bomb the British into submission. Murrow is credited largely with bringing the war directly into people's living rooms. He was able to capture the sound in the field, and he was also very good at painting a picture with the words that he was using. Let's listen on to that report a little more.
A searchlight just burst into action off in the distance. One single beam sweeping the sky above me now. People are walking along quite quietly. We're just at the entrance of an air raid shelter here, and I must move this cable over just a bit so people can walk in. Here comes one of those big red buses around the corner. Double deckers they are. Just a few lights on the top deck. In this blackness, it looks very much like a ship that's passing in the night, and you just see the portholes. I'll just ooze down in the darkness here along these steps and see if I can pick up the sound of people's feet as they walk along. One of the strangest sounds one can hear in London these days, or rather these dark nights, just the sound of footsteps walking along the street, like ghosts shod with steel shoes.
Yeah.
That's Murrow. Murrow was an amazing, amazing broadcaster. You know, there's these books of Murrow's broadcasts. Then you can listen to him In Search of Light, I think it's called. Nothing like listening to him.
Nothing like it. Nothing like it. And he really was a pioneer in how you report from the field. And, you know, you get to hear the air raid sirens going on behind him, but he's also talking about what he's seeing in front of his face, which is, you know. And, of course, you got to remember that this is this is going on in people's living rooms for the first time. It's not just that they're, you know, we're so used to having a television on or something like that in our homes. This is the first time they're actually getting the on-the-scene reports from that.
And it becomes a trusted source.
It becomes a trusted source.
You know,
people were very tuned in that time for those important words, "We interrupt this program."
Yeah, they were waiting for it. You know, radio is a trusted source. It remains a trusted source. We have Murrow behind us. Murrow's over in the talk studio. There's a picture of Murrow on the wall behind us, just as a reminder, an homage, a hope for that, you know, you rise to the occasion of the guy who sort of started it and was so great at it in the first place and set the tone. When broadcasters get a Murrow Award, they're very proud. The Murrow Award is prestigious. If you are understanding that we're talking about this because this is a radio, this is a great, important medium. It's been around for a long time. It's built up and become this trusted source. And NPR is the carrying on the work of these great mediums, going beyond of these great people who began this process, goes beyond the headlines. We come to you and we say, hey, this is a way to pay for it. It's not advertising. It's just twice a year we say, you have to be a part of it to help it be the kind of institution you care about. And that's why we look for your call.
206-543-9595. We do want to hear those phones ring while we're talking about this. I've got a lot of other great clips coming up, bringing it all the way into the modern day so you can actually hear the NPR reporters on the scene.
Well, I think it's interesting that we're talking about storytelling and the Selected Shorts guys, of which there's one ticket left. You've pledged $150. they're just a part of that too, because all the storytelling has been evolving on radio as it began, right? When people used to read cartoon strips on the air.
They used to reenact baseball games from the stats in papers, which I just learned about thanks to a listener, actually, and I'm going to look into that for you. But
Ronald Reagan did it with the ticker tape.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about this because this used to be more of the norm. I'm a huge radio fan, and I'm especially a radio fan of the golden age of radio, Steve, because they were doing things of high artistry. And unfortunately, just because of the way that markets were driven over time and the advent of television and the commercial influx into radio, you're not really seeing as much of this kind of reporting as there used to be. And you're not seeing the kind of entertainment shows on the radio that you used to be seeing. Partly because we rely on commercial influences now to direct what can happen on the radio.
And
commercial interests are interested in what is going to get me a predictable market of people. You know, can I form a radio station that is music that is directed at this particular market so I know exactly how to advertise to those people? That's what we're looking at in the landscape, except for NPR, because of people like you calling, pledging your support at 206-543-9595.
And getting a gold star.
And getting a gold star.
For your prize.
You know, I like it. We need to pass out gold stars.
It's not a decoder ring that you buy when you're told to buy the cereal. It's the actual program itself, and then a little prize as a little gold star as a thank you.
I mean, personally, I wish that there were more and more radio stations like this on the air. You know, if it were up to me, we wouldn't be dwindling. We would be growing, and we would grow, like, into another station and into another station, and we could revive the golden age. But that's a pipe dream, let's face it. You know, we're still working on this overall goal of $15,000 by the end of the hour. We've got 20 minutes, and we're not even near it yet. So we need people to call. 206-543-9595.
Do you want them to imagine what radio was like in the olden days, even when it wasn't always truthful?
Yes, I do. Well, as you know, when you're a trusted news source like KOW, you can't take that very lightly. That's something NPR learns every year on April Fool's Day, isn't it, when they try to do some sort of fake story?
Yeah, I understand we're introducing macaques into the Northwest Forest.
Yes, that was ours for this year. Perhaps you've heard this before.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars.
Now, that's the beginning of the infamous War of the Worlds broadcast. Those fake news updates, of course, people, like I told you...
The Intercontinental News, huh?
Yeah, like I told you, people were waiting for those words. We interrupt this broadcast because they were in the middle of a war, and so when they heard that, of course, their ears perk up, and they're like, what? What's going on? These fake news updates lit up the switchboards. Some people went screaming out of their homes. We've heard these stories. Actor Lionel Barrymore released his horses so that they could go fend for themselves and save themselves. radio had become a trusted news source, and so many people listening didn't understand that the news reports of hydrogen explosions and Martian landings were just a part of a story. And I would like you to listen to Orson Welles, who, of course, was the man behind this broadcast, trying to defend himself to the media the next day. Not a very convincing defense, in my opinion.
I'm extremely surprised to learn that a story which has become familiar to children through the medium of comic strips and novels and adventure stories should have had such an immediate and profound effect upon radio listeners.
Yeah, that's him being like, hey, the listeners were idiots. It's not my fault.
Not my fault, you know, that I did it so convincingly and used all the conventions.
Sorry. You know, I love that. It's such a patronizing response, but we do all love Orson Welles, don't we? So shall we jump ahead? Do you want to leap forward? Let's leap forward into the 60s, you know, because then we can start talking about things that some of you actually remember. More of you actually remember. Okay, so we'll jump ahead to the 60s. Here's a story that many of you probably personally remember. You may even remember where you were when you heard this story. This is a clip of several different radio newsmen talking on November 22nd, 1963.
President Kennedy and Texas Governor John Connally were shot from ambush today in Dallas, Texas.
We're canceling all regular formats during this emergency. We'll continue to bring you news and bulletins, no commercial formats.
Other information just in, President Kennedy apparently was shot in the head.
An important bulletin. President Kennedy was given blood transfusions just a few moments ago at Parkland Hospital in an effort to save his life.
So, you know, television was also highly involved in that story, Steve.
Yeah, one of television's real moments of emergency.
Yeah, it was. It was really, those were radio men there, but it was really on that day, Walter Cronkite's television announcement that most people remember the most vividly. It also, when you hear it auditorially, you'll see it. It is riveting on the radio as well. He made this announcement at 2:38 Eastern time.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
So that announcement was followed by a long period of silence while you can visually watch him trying to keep his composure. Because it was very emotional for him, too. And he also had been working for a really long time, waiting to hear what was going to happen. They made an unprecedented decision for television when that happened. Following President Kennedy's death, they decided that they were going to suspend all programming on television stations for 4 days in an effort to try to unite the nation in a collective mourning period.
I remember that. I was in fourth grade when that happened. I remember we were sent home after the announcement, after the principal talked, and we were all sent home. I mean, the argument, how broadcasting has evolved, how broadcasting has become more so integral to our lives. And now, of course, we're seeing broadcasting changing again. There's broadcasting, there's narrowcasting, there's podcasting. There's many ways that you are reached and many ways that you can choose to take in information. Part of the concern that many people have as well with this narrowcasting, people will just choose those things that appeal to them only, things that reinforce their own prejudices and beliefs. One of the things that public radio tries to do, I think that when you listen to This American Life or when you're listening to All Things Considered, you know they are doing it. Many voices, many from many walks of life being brought into your car, into your ear, into your living room, in order to remind us, if nothing else, remind us that it's a big world out there and that we can't just be taking our own, you know, prejudices to bed with us each night, that we should be challenged. And that's what radio does. That's what we try to do. That's what public radio tries to do. When we, you know, here we are Thursday, there were many different models. And the model that evolved for the kinds of commercial broadcasting you were citing when you were talking about CNN was, they have to get the most ears. We don't have to get the most ears. We just have to get discerning ears. We have to get you who are listening, who have made the choice to say, oh, you know what? I like this model. I like a model that says, I try it. I enjoy it. It's something that does appeal to me. I know I'm getting what I want because I've listened for a year. And now it's time for me to become a member. It's time for me to act to keep this institution going. And so the next year it'll be there next year. So what are we down to? $89,000 is our overall amount that we need to raise to end our drive. That'll happen because you'll call at 206-543-9595 or you'll call up your grandparents and say, hey, I just heard that Walter Cronkite again. Remember what that was like? You know, that you are part of the evolution of broadcasting, and the way you keep part is to choose, and you choose to become a member at 1-866-677-5869.
Well, it's also about those collecting those discerning ears and hoping that they also shoot back support in your direction.
We hope that you will pledge $250 for a year's worth of public radio. You know, there's all sorts of thank yous, the prizes Katie was talking about. There's the on-air mentions. You pledge at the broadcast circle level at $1,000, and you get these on-air mentions. You can write your own message. But, you know, you're pledging those dollars not just for what you have listened to. You've listened to it. You've checked it out. It's for the future. It's for you to be a part of us, you know, going forward. And who knows what's going to come on the radio tomorrow, right, or the next day. Who knows how you'll be surprised. That's part of the fun of it. That's why we have so much fun with the sound of the day, because we get to be surprised by something so natural as what's around us. 206-543-9595, my friends. We need to raise $5,000 before 11 o'clock. So that's
Five of you pledging at the $1,000 level?
50 people, $100. A few of you at $250. There's all sorts of ways to make it work. Just check your pocketbook. You know, check your pocket. See what kind of change it has. See if you have $3.37 a week to make it happen.
We try to give you a wider worldview. It's so easy to get a smaller and smaller worldview as you go through the through your life. We try to make it bigger. 206-543-9595. And we keep trying to take you to the scene like Edward R. Murrow did. Radio journalism still going strong, largely thanks to listeners who support KUOW. And as a result, we're still bringing breaking news to the airwaves live from the scene. For instance, here is NPR's Melissa Block reporting live from downtown Manhattan on September 11th, 2001.
Every major building is being evacuated. People are trying to get home with no way of doing so. The subways are shut down. The tunnels are shut down. You see people clustered around cars with their doors open and the radios blasting the news of what's going on. People clustered with their hands over their mouths in horror, lined up at payphones trying to call their relatives and loved ones to let them know they're okay. And huge, huge clouds of smoke billowing over the entire city, visible virtually everywhere you go.
See, clustered around cars listening to the radio.
You need to know what's happening. You're tuning into the radio.
It's just the like easiest, the Golden Age. It's the easiest medium to get to.
And, you know, since it's broadcasting, sometimes the medium continues even when people might lose power or other access to cell phone coverage and the like, or newspapers being published.
Now, we just touched on a lot of really kind of dour topics. September
11th,
yeah, no
kidding, man.
The Blitz in
You're
London.
You're kind of a bummer.
I hope I didn't bring everybody down so much that we can't make our overall goal
kind
of $15,000, and we still need to do that over $4,000 to go before the end of the hour.
Thinking about death with dignity laws.
I know.
Thinking about all these things. Very serious. People are going, where are the comedians? Why aren't you joking it up? Well, you know, we do serious things. That's what we do.
We do both. 206-543-9595.
I mean,
you'll support both.
There is the Carl Castle bobblehead doll from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So, you know, you can imagine that wagging himself, Carl Castle, a newscaster. And ask yourself, is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is sort of the opposite of, you know, as serious as we could be, is that worth supporting? 206-543-9595. It is. We're supporting the fact that we're going to talk about the restaurants and eating lunch and a good cookbook in just a few moments.
But first, we want to hear from you. Toll free 1-866-NPR-KOW.
Have we heard from you
1-866-677-5869. Only $87,000 left to go to end this pledge drive. We only get there one call of support at a time.
I don't think we've heard from you yet. You know, you can become an Evergreen member. This is a good time to do it. Very convenient. You just sign up, credit card number, and then it just renews each month, each paycheck. You get to decide, and then boom, you can cancel it when you're fed up, or more likely say, you know, I am glad I'm an Evergreen member because public radio is important to me, and the pledge drives on, and I'm going to continue to be a member. I like it.
And you continually shorten the drive by having your contribution, something that we rely on when we're factoring the numbers. So more Evergreen members we have, the less we need to raise live on the air.
$250 for a year's worth of public radio. Can your pocketbook afford that? Does it make sense to you? Every dollar matters. Can you afford $1,000? Is that important to you? Is radio important enough to say, oh, I'm going to keep it going. I like radio. I'm going to keep that institution alive, and I can afford $1,000. Well, give us a call. $100? 206-543-9595. Think what you can afford. Know it's a shared sacrifice. Be a part of the institution.
And for goodness sake, don't let the final shred of the golden age of radio that we have left on the air die without your support. KUOW.org online. If you want to go there, 206-543-9595. If you want to call, keep KUOW strong.
Support for KUOW comes from Institute for Systems Biology, presenting the 12th Annual International Symposium, Systems Biology and the Brain, a two-day dialogue with brain researchers from institutions nationwide, April 13th to 14th at the South Lake Union ISB facilities. More at systemsbiology.org.
KUOW and the University of Washington Simpson Center for the Humanities present a CATS Distinguished Lecture featuring Josiah Ober on the history and future of democracy and democratic engagement, Tuesday, April 16th at University of Washington's Kane Hall. Learn more on the events page at KUOW.org.
Events page. You know what? There's still that one ticket, I think, unless they haven't have forgotten to erase it. There's still one ticket, $150. To go see Selected Shorts live at the Moore Theater.
One pair of tickets.
One pair. Two tickets. One pair, yes. One pair. Left. April 13th. Yes, you get to take somebody. $150. Join us. Support Public Radio. 206-543-9595. Maybe before you go or afterwards, when you see the Selected Shorts at the Moore, you might go to Sarah Dickerman, one of my favorite restaurants. It's good to talk to you again, Sarah.
Good to talk to you. Yes, after you've pledged, you can take yourself out for a nice Vietnamese meal at Ba Bar, which, of course, is open, I think, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner now. And for lunch, I really recommend their wonderful brothy delights, including several different kinds of pho. My favorite, I think, is the oxtail pho.
I was going to agree with you on that.
Yeah.
It's very different and very tasty.
Yeah. I mean, they really make their broth with conviction. There's a lot of places to get pho around town. And I just find the broth here just so delicious and round and full of good flavor. There's a vegan version if you don't eat meat that's made with mushrooms. And then I also love their congee, which is, for those who don't know, a thin rice porridge. It's like a ricey soup made with chicken broth. And they serve those with a soft-boiled egg on top. And they make their own Chinese donuts, which are those long sort of churro-shaped donuts. And you put them into the soft congee, and they're a little bit crunchy and chewy and delicious. So yummy.
World cuisine from Ba Bar, from France and Vietnam on 12th across from Seattle University. It's a really fun place because it just introduces you to food that you would be surprised at, sort of a Vietnamese. I don't know if it's fair to call it street food, but it is lots of different kinds of food.
Yeah, I mean, I think it very much has that sort of cosmopolitan Saigon feel. The reason they have French food there, of course, is because there was a French presence in Vietnam before all the altercations in the 20th century. And so they have a really wonderful pastry chef there. So good homemade croissants and cookies and beautiful little pastries.
All right, Sarah. Ba Bar, I appreciate you talking to us, giving us a little taste of what we might be eating for lunch.
Glad to talk with you, and good luck with the last bits of the pledge drive.
Thank you. Sarah Dickerman, she writes for Slate. She writes for the New York Times. She also writes at other publications. You saw her work on dieting and getting healthy at the beginning of the year. She blogs at sarahdickerman.com, one of the many contributors who helped round out our program with her volunteer work. You're one of those many contributors rounding out our program with your emails and your suggestions. How about joining us now to show your support to public radio at 206-543-9595? Katie, we're not quite at our goal. We got about 3 minutes left. Are we going to do that? Well, people have to ask themselves, do we want to end this drive? Yes. Do you want to help us reach this goal of $15,000 for weekday? Yes. So if you're listening around the region, you listeners to KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, Digital HD Services, we're looking for you to help us right now. We're looking for you to pledge $100, $500. Give us a call. We want to hear from you.
206-543-9595. We like to make our goals. We want to get this pledge drive done. $87,000 left to go to finish the drive. We get there one call at a time with you. Or go online, KUOW.org. Like a listener who just pledged online saying, hey, KUOW turned my wife, Chen, into a news junkie. And here's some money for distracting her with quality content while I get my video game fix on.
There you very go. That's very nice. Distracted with quality content while I play the latest release. You know, we were talking about all the kids in the back seat this whole week and how those kids have grown up and now they're in the front seat. And now the kids in the back seat are still listening to public radio, and they're going to be the ones to keep it going. You need to support right now. You are the drivers. You are the people in charge. So give us a call at 206-543-9595. Help us make our goal. We need your help to reach our goal. Pledge $250. Pledge $100. It's your money keeping the service going. And I know it's hard to ask, but it's the way this works. We need to hear from you.
if you rely on this show to distract you while you're commuting, we want to hear from you. 206-543-9595. Distracted by good content.
Yeah,
I like
you're learning.
That idea. You know, we've all listened to things and we've all watched things where afterwards you said, gee, I feel like I need to take a scrub brush to my brain to eliminate that. That's not going to happen to you at KYW. Be like Lauren. She says, as a social worker, I rely on your show to give me a critical dialogue about the topics that matter to me. Where else are you finding the topics that matter to you on the radio? Are you finding them in very many places? Maybe this is one that you want to keep strong. 206-543-9595. And Wendy and Fred say, now that we're retired, we listen and enjoy even more often than we did before.
Look,
thanks to you.
Become a new member at 1-866-677-5869. You know about the quality of service. You've listened to it. You know the impact it can make in your life, in your friend's life, in the life of the people who want to play video games. It's now. We need to hear from you now at 206-543-9595. Keep it rolling. Let's get this pledge drive over. Let's meet our goals. We need to hear from you. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. A little flurry of phones is happening right now. If you haven't been able to get on the phone,
go online, kow.org. You can.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.